This morning we discussed, we started the third chapter which spoke about, we started by discussing where Shukadev Goswami mentioned that, okay, my dear Parikshit Maharaj, you had asked me what is meant to be done by someone at the time of death and by everyone at all times. In response to that, I have described to you the two paths of liberation. And also I have spoken to you about the path of bhakti which is performed by intelligent people. But some people also tend to worship the demigods. Like for example, with various material desires, they may worship the demigods also. And in that context, we were discussing how different people worship different demigods for different purposes. Like that. So this is where we paused in the morning. We discussed something about demigod worship briefly. How it is not, the desire to worship a demigod is not born out of the scriptural conclusions. It is born out of one's own swabhava that we saw this morning. So now we will continue further. But before that, if there are any quick comments, questions based on what we discussed this morning, we could take few minutes, some questions. Can you pass the mic?
So Prabhu, we came to conclusion that the demigod worship is not prescribed in the scriptures.
Yeah.
It comes out of svabhava, means own impression.
Yeah.
So question might come, how that people get the svabhava?
How people get svabhava?
Yeah. Because unless until there is something in the scriptures, how can they get this kind of svabhava?
Oh, to worship particular demigods?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. See, naturally, like some kinds of influence of particular modes naturally inspire them in particular directions. Maybe they saw such kinds of worship somewhere, they got attracted. It does not necessarily refer to exactly demigods, it could be some demigod-like worship also. Like someone may worship pop stars, someone may worship sports persons, you know, like that. That also is like some kind of, you can say something like demigod worship only. Like that. But in that way, seeing someone else do some kind of worship, they may get attracted also. Like that.
Krishna also not interfering here.
Yeah, he will not interfere.
He's not even say, okay, they can worship, no problem.
Yeah.
Because he has given full independence to all the living entities.
Yeah.
But now question might come, how they will worship the demigods? Certainly there is some rules, regulations they have to follow.
Correct. So the inclination to worship some kind of personality may come from experience, but how to worship, they may get that inspiration from, they may try to take some guidance from the scriptures for it.
If they take the any guidance from the scriptures, that means there is a mention about the demigods worship.
Yeah, there are many scriptures that talk about demigod worship.
Yeah.
But it is not a recommendation of the scripture.
Yeah. If you take the Karmakanda section of the Vedas,
yeah,
you see in the part, maximum the portion is explained about the demigod worship only.
Correct.
That means there is an explanation or say in the scripture that you can worship the demigods.
Correct. The point is, there are some people, like for example, I could let's say I am preparing for my 10th class physics exam. So I may take my textbook, read the contents, read the introduction, read the national anthem that is also given in the beginning of the book, and go for the exam. Will I pass the exam? Because that is not the conclusion of the book. So when you go for the exam, you should know the conclusions of each chapter. So then one can pass. So the conclusions, we are not talking about the details. We are talking about the conclusions of the scriptures. I didn't say that there is no mention of demigod worship in scripture. But demigod worship is not the conclusion of the scriptures. If you ask the scriptures whom to worship, they will never recommend demigod. Like if you ask the government, should I drink? Government will not recommend that you drink liquor. But government knows that you will anyway drink. Therefore, there are some government authorized liquor shops. At least don't make the liquor at your home and drink. Okay, pay some tax to the government and drink like that. So even though there are government authorized liquor shops, that does not mean that government is authorizing drinking liquor. Well, the government is recommending that one drinks liquor. Government is not recommending, but the government knows that you will anyway drink. So therefore, there are some authorized liquor shops. That is the point. Anything else? Prabhuji, yes.
Hare Krishna. Faith based of the own desire,
yeah,
of those,
yeah,
people. Is this the same Shraddha like Laukika Shraddha?
Yeah.
In this,
yeah,
same time.
This is like Laukika Shraddha only. But you can say something like Laukika Shraddha. Yeah. This is not Shastriya Shraddha.
Okay, but this is not controversial, but they have also scriptures for this service.
They also have scriptures, what?
Scriptures how to serve these demigods and like this.
Yeah, they do have. Yeah.
Yes. People can say, no, we have scriptures how we should serve the demigods and like this. They have own goals and like this. And why they...
That is true. That's what we have been discussing. There are scriptures which talk about glorification of demigods. Mm-hmm. And the demigod worshippers firmly believe that this is the conclusion of the scriptures.
Okay.
And Krishna allows them to have this conclusion.
Okay.
Why? Because otherwise they'll be forced to worship the Supreme Lord. If someone genuinely comes to the scriptures and asks, who is the greatest? I want to surrender to him. The scriptures say Vishnu or Krishna. But if someone is not inclined to ask that question to the scriptures,
okay,
they are already predisposed to worship particular personalities. Krishna says, let him worship. I will not force myself upon that person. So he allows him to worship and he creates some scriptures which, okay, seem to glorify the demigods as being the highest. But the devotees understand that, this is written in a particular context. This is not the highest understanding. The devotees understand.
Okay.
But those people also should accept the demigods. If all scriptures are very clearly glorifying Krishna as the topmost, then where will the demigods get their faith from?
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, the scriptures sort of also seem to glorify the demigods. But the worshippers of Krishna or Vishnu, they understand that this is a secondary glorification, this is not primary glorification. Like for example, let's say Vrindavan temple has 10 vehicles and 10 drivers. Okay. So let's say one driver's name is Krishna, another driver's name is... That will confuse. Okay, let's say one driver's name is Ramesh, another driver's name is Suresh. Okay. So, our Tirumala Govind Prabhu was the in charge of the vehicle department of Krishna Balaram temple. So I go to Tirumala Govind Prabhu and I ask, Prabhuji, actually I need a vehicle for some service. Can you please allot a vehicle for me? So he says, okay, fine, sure, take one vehicle. So I'll ask him, which vehicle? So he may say, oh, take Suresh's vehicle. Okay. So Suresh's vehicle means what? Does the vehicle belong to Suresh? No. He also knows that the vehicle belongs to Radha Shyam Sundar. I also know that the vehicle belongs to Radha Shyam Sundar. But for conventional purpose, sometimes, secondarily, even though primarily it belongs to Radha Shyam Sundar, secondarily, it is being taken care of by Suresh. So like that. So sometimes the demigods seem to be glorified as like the, like for example, Brahmaji glorifies Lord Shiva to be the creator, maintainer and destroyer. In Bhagavatam only. We are not talking about any other scriptures. In Bhagavatam, Brahmaji glorifies Lord Shiva as being the creator, maintainer and destroyer. Other Vedic scriptures also says, Jagata Pitarau Vande Parvati Parameshwarau. The father and mother of this material, of this universe is said to be Lord Shiva and Mother Parvati. Mm-hmm. Correct, in one sense. But ultimately, they are not independent father and mother. Mm-hmm. They are also dependent on Vishnu. Mm-hmm. But when the demigod worshippers read this, they will take it as an absolute statement. Whereas when the worshippers of Vishnu see, they will see that this statement is of secondary nature. They will see that, oh, this is not exactly Suresh's vehicle, but this actually belongs to Radha Shyam Sundar. They can see that. So Krishna has created the scriptures in such a way that the demigod worshippers also feel that my Swami is the greatest. And Vishnu's worshippers also feel, oh no, my Swami is the greatest. So he has created scriptures like that. Like sometime back, someone sent me, showed me his WhatsApp message. I don't know if I shared this with you. So he showed me, Prabhuji, what do you see in this photo? I said, nothing, just some one circle. In between I see many dots. You see, okay. What colors do you see in the dots? I said, red and white. I said, sure, see clearly. And I said, yeah, I see red and white. Red dots, white dots. He said, okay, just wait. And he called another person. And he said, Prabhuji, can you see which dot, what are the colors you see? He said, green and yellow. Green dots and yellow dots. And then he said, okay, wait. He has a third person. Prabhuji, what colors do you see? He said, green and yellow. And then he said, fourth person. What do you see? Red and white. So now he told, all four of you, together, I am not doing any magic trick. You look at the same photograph and tell me what colors you see. Two people said red and white. Two people said green and yellow. It is the same picture. There is no magic there. The explanation that is given is, whoever is right-brained would see one combination of colors and whoever is left-brained would see one combination of colors. Maybe their explanation is right or wrong, but the fact is even an ordinary human being is capable of creating something which for some people looks like something and for other people looks like something else. Yes. Then what about the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Can't He create scriptures in such a way that the demigod worshippers also feel that my Swami is the greatest, and Vishnu worshippers also feel, oh yeah, we understand what is the, it's a secondary statement. They can also understand it like that.
But in this case, next question, both sides of these people are in Varnashram system?
No.
Okay.
No. Okay. So this point, because you brought out this point, we will touch upon this point. Okay.
Those who worship the Supreme Lord, because wherever Varnashram is mentioned in the scriptures, it talks about worship of Vishnu. Worship of Vishnu means either direct or indirect, not improper, the way in which not through worship of demigods. So one who worships Vishnu, he is within Varnashram. Varnashrama charavata purushena parappuman Vishnur aradhyate panta nanyatattosha karanam. Okay. Atappumbir dvijashreshta varnashrama vibhagasha swanushtitasya dharmasya samsiddhir haritoshanam. Okay. Or any other verse you can think. What is that? Dharma swanushtitappumsam vishvaksena katasuyaha na utpadayet yadi ratim shramayeva hi kevalam. So, like that, wherever you see in the scriptures, whenever Varnashram is described, Vishnu worship is invariably mentioned. So, when Vishnu worship is not there, it is not considered as Varnashram. So, therefore, in that verse, Chaturvida bhajante mam jana sukritino arjuna, in that verse, the word sukritina, Vishnu Jagadakur explains, that sukritina means followers of Varnashram dharma, he says. So who worships Krishna? He says followers of Varnashram Dharma worship Krishna. So as a corollary, who does not worship Krishna? Followers of Varnashram, those who do not follow Varnashram, they do not worship Krishna. Or those who do not worship Krishna are not considered as followers of Varnashram Dharma. Okay. So then, and Bhagavad Gita also says that those who worshippers of demigod, they do not have a faith which is based on scriptures. So three things are like almost like synonymous. They have the same meaning. One is worship of Vishnu, being in Varnashram system, and third is following scriptures. So if one says he is following the scriptures, then he will automatically worship the Supreme Lord, and because of worshipping the Supreme Lord, he will automatically be considered within the Varnashram system. So if one is not having a Shraddha which is born out of Shastra, then he does not worship Krishna, and therefore he is not considered as within the Varnashram system. So Varana, this is what Bhagavatam 11th canto also says. We discussed this last time also. Mukabahuru padebhya purushasya ashramai saha chatvaro jagnire varna gunair vipradaya pratak yayesham purusham sakshad atma prabhavam ishwaram na bhajanti avajananti sthanat brashtat patantyada. So he says that the various varnas and ashramas, they follow, they form the various limbs of the Virat Purusha's body. So just as the hand has to cooperate with the body, the leg has to cooperate with the body. But if the hand, leg, anything does not cooperate with the body, if the limbs do not cooperate with the body, then they are not considered as proper limbs. So he says, so therefore if the those within the Varnashram system, if they do not worship Vishnu, and they neglect worship of Vishnu, sthanat brashtat patantyadaha, they fall down from their Varnashram system and go out of Varnashram. So therefore, in one sense, demigod worshippers in the strictest sense are not considered within the Varnashram system. We don't have to go and tell this to the demigod worshippers. This is not meant for that purpose. One thing, certain things are meant for our understanding. Certain things are meant for preaching. You go and preach this, you will lose that person. He will never come to Krishna. You say you are a Brahmana, but you are not a Brahmana because you don't worship Krishna. You say this, you have lost him. So one thing is about our own understanding, to strengthen our understanding. Another thing is what needs to be preached, what should not be preached, we should know. It has to be sensitively preached. Like one devotee came to Prabhupada and he told, Prabhupada, you have mentioned in Krishna book that, Ugrasen had many millions of bodyguards. And also it is mentioned that Nanda Maharaj had many millions of cows. But Vrindavan is only 64 square miles. Or the Mathura Mandal is only 64 square miles. Sorry, 84. Chaurashi. So 84 square miles. How can... But Krishna book says that millions and millions of cows, millions and millions of bodyguards. So, how do I preach such things to others? So, this was the question he asked to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, of all the things that I have written in my book, couldn't you find anything else to preach to a beginner? He said. There are so many things which a beginner who does not have faith can relate to, that you can speak from the book. Of all the things, you found these one, two statements only to preach to the beginner. Like that Prabhupada asked. So therefore, we should know that the ninth offense to the holy name is to instruct a faithless person about the glories of the holy name. That does not mean we should stop preaching. Because practically everyone is faithless only. We should know what to preach. That in which he can develop some faith. Only that much we can preach. Beyond that, what he can appreciate, if we say, he may become inimical, he may become very doubtful. So therefore such things we should not be preaching actually. So therefore, even though we are understanding these things about demigod worship, please do not use this insensitively to preach to those who are actually practicing demigod worship. This is not meant for that. Like that. You can say. Yeah. You can, along with that, you can worship Krishna also. Something like that we can say. See, sometimes we need not always speak the absolute truth to preach. In the beginning only. Like, I'll give you one example. In our Chaupati temple, many tourists who come to Mumbai, to see Mumbai, we have a tie-up with the tourist department. They bring them to Chaupati temple also, to take darshan and just look around the temple. So, a group of them, three of them, who had come from the United States, they went to our gift shop and they saw the book Journey Home. This is His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj had written his autobiography. They saw that Journey Home and they thought, oh, we have read this book. Like that, they were sharing with someone else who was staying there. And they told, oh, the author of this book stays here only. So, then they said, oh, we are very inspired by him. Can we meet him? Like that, they said. So, they took him to meet His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. And actually, they were also from United States. And they were also from the Jewish faith, which Maharaj was from the Jewish faith. So, when they read that book, they felt very inspired. So they met Maharaj and then they had a nice discussion with Maharaj, and it was time for them to leave to catch their flight. It was the time for them to catch the flight. So they asked Maharaj one thing. Swamiji, if instead of taking up to the path that you have taken, if you had remained a Jew, a sincere Jew in your life, would you have achieved the same success? This was a question they asked His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. if instead of taking up to Krishna consciousness, if you had practiced the Jewish faith, would you have achieved the same success? That is Krishna Prem. What is the answer? I mean, what is the correct answer? The scripturally correct answer is what? No. But Maharaj said, yes. Why? Because he saw that these were sincere people who were attached to their faith, Jewish faith. But at the same time, he saw that these people were getting attracted to himself, who is a Vaishnava. And the means to get attracted to the process of bhakti is through by getting attracted to Vaishnava. So he understood that if I say no now, okay, because that is the last meeting, they are going to leave after that, then the connection will be cut. So he told yes. And they left, and later they got connected to devotees in the United States. So the point is, we need not always speak the absolute truth when we are preaching to new people. It's not necessary. So, but at the same time, as devotees, we should understand what is the absolute truth. So we may understand certain things about demigod worship, but these are very sensitive things. We are not supposed to speak it to beginners like that. Okay, so we will move ahead. Rajyakamo manundevan nirritim tabicharan yajet kama kamo yajet somam akama purusham param. The next few verses are describing about, you know, various kinds of worship. Generally, those with this desire worship this demigod, those with this desire worship this demigod, like that. And this verse is a continuation of that. He says, one who desires domination over a kingdom or an empire should worship the Manus. One who desires victory over an enemy should worship the demons. And one who desires sense gratification should worship the moon demigod, Soma. But one who desires nothing of material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Akama Purusham Param. If you have no desire, you worship the Supreme Lord. Does that mean that the Supreme Lord has no capacity to fulfill any desire? One may say. If you are only self-satisfied, if you don't need anything, only then you come to me. Is that the understanding? So, here, Srila Prabhupada writes here in the purport, liberated people are not attracted by any of these material attractions. It is only the foolish conditioned souls who get attracted. And he says the leaders of such materialists, they are actually greater nonsensical persons, because they say, yatoma tatopat. Whatever you may follow, everything leads to the same goal, like that they say. So Prabhupada says, but one cannot get a ticket to Delhi and hope to go to Bombay. Therefore, worshipping the demigods is defined as, worshipping only the Supreme Personality of Godhead is defined as bhakti. But that worship can also be with material desires. One may worship the Supreme Lord with material desires also. Or one may worship the Supreme Lord without any material desire also. So that is why the next verse says, akama sarva kamo va moksha kama udaradihi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. He says, akama, whether one has no material desires. Sarva kama, whether one has all the material desires. Moksha kama, whether one desires liberation. He says, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. If he tries to attain all these desires by performing Tivra Bhakti Yoga, Yajeta Purusham Param, worships the Supreme Lord through Bhakti Yoga, Udaradihi, he is an intelligent person. So therefore, intelligent person here means one with Shastriya Shraddha. One with Shastriya Shraddha, he will try to worship the Supreme Lord to fulfill his desires. And less intelligent means one who does not have Shastriya Shraddha, he will worship the demigods or others, other Yakshas and Rakshasas or Pretas, Bhutaganas to fulfill those desires. So that is the meaning of Akama, Sarvakamova, Mokshakama, Udaradihi. Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. Tivrena Bhakti Yogena means, what is the meaning of Tivrena Bhakti Yogena? Okay. Wholeheartedly? Okay. Yes. It cannot be ahaituki because sarvakama and mokshakama have a hetu. Akama has no hetu. Actually, what it here it means is, when Rupa Goswami defines pure devotional service, Anya Bilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam Anukulyena Krishnana Shilanam Bhaktiruttama. So he talks about four characteristics of pure devotional service. Okay. Anya Bilashita Shunyam, it has no other desire other than the desire to please Krishna. Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam, that practice is not covered by the other practice of Jnana or Karma Yoga, etc. And Anukulyena, performed with a pleasing attitude towards Krishna. And Krishna Anushilanam, it includes some practical service also. So, of these four qualities, two are primary qualities, two are secondary qualities. The primary qualities are Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam. Favorable devotional service towards Krishna. But favorable devotional service towards Krishna may be performed with material desires and along with Jnana, Karma, Yoga, etc. But when it is performed without the covering of Jnana, Karma, Yoga and with no other desire other than desire to please Krishna, then it becomes Uttama Bhakti. So the secondary characteristics are Anyabhilashita Shunyam and Jnana, Karma, Dhyanavritam. Okay. So here, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena means, one may have other abhilasha, but to attain that other abhilasha, if one performs Jnana Karma Dhyanavrita Bhakti, then that is called Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. He may, otherwise one may practice Karma Mishra Bhakti or Jnana Mishra Bhakti to attain the other desires. But if one practices Shuddha Bhakti only, okay, so mixed devotional service can be mixed in two ways. One's prayojan may become mixed, or one's abhideya can be mixed. Okay. Anyabhilashita shunyam. If there are other anyabhilashita shunyam indicates purity of prayojan. There is no other desire other than the desire to please Krishna. And Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam indicates purity of the Abhideya. And the process is not covered by Jnana, Karma, Yoga like that. So here when it says Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, it means with pure Abhideya, one may try to fulfill any of their Abhilasha. So Tivrena Bhakti Yogena here means Jnana Karma Dhyanavrita Bhakti. It may be for fulfilling other abhilashas, that's okay. But at least the most powerful practice to fulfill one's material desires also is Jnana Karma Dhyanavrita Bhakti. So we may say, Prabhu, I have a desire to earn lot of money. By chanting the holy name, can I become a very rich man? Is the answer right or wrong? Is the answer yes or no? Can one become a rich person by... Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, one can become a rich person by, but that is not the highest motive to worship the Supreme Lord. But if a person is convinced that the goal of my life is to become a very rich man, whom should I worship? So we don't say, Prabhu, only if you have desire to please Krishna, you worship Krishna. Otherwise, worship demigods. Is that what we say? No. If someone is convinced that he wants to become a very rich man, you can say, okay, take Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. Hear, chant, remember Krishna, you will become a rich man. That's what here it is mentioned. Akama, sarvakamova, mokshakama, udaradihi. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. So, one may not have the purity of prayojan, but at least if the abhideya is pure, then such a person is also considered as very intelligent. That is what is described here. Any comments or questions about this point before we move on further? Can you pass the mic to Sri Kesho Prabhu?
We read the verse maybe some days before in this second canto only, similar verses, that is eta nirvidya mananam ichchatam
akuto bhayam yoginam nirpanirnitam harinamana kirtanam.
So another is, I think, that same only, nirvidya mananam ichchatam akuto bhayam, all these varieties of people.
Yeah.
So they get their ultimate result.
Their ultimate result they get by chanting the holy name.
So yeah. Similar, I'm just quoting the verse.
Yeah, yeah. Or these practitioners actually are, they have a contaminated abhideya also. Because they are karma yogis, jnana yogis, ashtanga yogis. That verse says that even they get their success by having bhakti as an element of their practice. So a jnana yogi also has bhakti as an element of his practice of bhakti. A karma yogi also has bhakti as a particular element of his practice of bhakti. They also chant the holy names, they may worship the deities also. But ultimately, they may also practice. So that verse actually refers to those whose abhideya is also contaminated. But here, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena means one whose abhideya at least should be pure. He must be practicing only Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atma Nivedanam. This is all I need to do to attain what? Mukti? Fine. To attain what? Bhukti? Fine. No problem. To attain what? Prema? Very good. So, if one's practice at least has purity of abhideya, that is considered to be better than having impure prayojan and impure abhideya. Better to have at least pure abhideya to attain impure prayojan. That's okay. But eventually, if such people come in touch with devotees, very quickly they may reform their impure prayojan also. Their prayojan will also become pure. But if one starts out with an impure abhideya, then it takes a very long time to rectify that attachment to karma, jnana, yoga, etc. It becomes very difficult. Like one person went to a mridanga teacher and he said, can you please teach me mridanga? And he said, yeah, I can teach you. So he said, how much, what is the fees? He said, do you know how to play mridanga somewhat? He says, yes, I know, I have played in kirtans, but I want to learn nicely. So he said, 1,000 rupees. And he said, okay. And then the next person came and he said, I have come here to learn mridanga from you. And he said, fine, I can teach you. And he said, how, what is the fees? He said, do you know how to play mridanga? And he said, no, I have never ever played mridanga. He said, 100 rupees is your fees. So this first person, he looked at the teacher and he said, I already know how to play mridanga. To teach me, you are charging me 1,000 rupees. He does not know how to play mridanga. For him, you are charging only 100 rupees. Why is this? He said, 900 rupees is to make you forget what you have improperly learnt. And 100 rupees is to teach you after that. So therefore, if one starts out with improper abhideya also, it becomes very difficult to make that person unlearn. That attachment to karma, jnana or yoga is very strong generally. So, therefore, here it is mentioned that, you know, purity of abhideya is very important. Even if one may have impure motives, but at least if one has faith in the pure process, only Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, etc., then that is still good, like that.
So, Prabhu, then this doesn't fall under Uttama Bhakti principle.
This is not Uttama Bhakti. So this is Tivara Bhakti but not Uttama Bhakti.
Okay.
Because it does not have Anya Bilashita Shunyam. Yeah. Akama is the best. Because Akama also has Anya Bilashita Shunyam. But Sarvakama and Moksha Kama, they also have Jnana Karma Dhyanavritta Bhakti is there. Like that. Is it clear? Okay. Now, one may say, see the order in which it is mentioned. First, akama is mentioned, then sarvakama is mentioned, then moksha kama is mentioned. Akama means no desire. Sarvakama means all desires. Moksha kama means one desire for mukti. So, one may say, oh, the order seems to be a little wrong. It should be akama, mokshakama, sarvakama. Why is this mentioned as akama, sarvakama and mokshakama? So, here the acharyas explain, the desire for material enjoyment is very weak enjoyment. But the desire for mukti is extremely strong. Rupa Goswami writes in Bhakti Rasamrit Sindhu, Bhukti Mukti Sprahayavat Pishachi Hridi Vartate Tavat Bhakti Sukasyatra Katam Abhyudayo Bhavet. He says that as long as the witches of Bhukti and Mukti are present within the heart, how can the seed of Bhakti fructify in that heart? He says. So, after quoting this verse, to give proof for this verse, he quotes one or two verses to show how the desire for bhakti is bad. But he quotes almost 30 to 35 verses to quote how the desire for mukti is even bad, worse than even desire for bhakti. Why? Because it is a much more deep-rooted desire. He gives the example that a person who has material desire may make some small sacrifices to get some material enjoyment. Whereas if you see a jnani or a yogi who is after mukti, the kind of sacrifices that he does to achieve his goal of mukti is much severe, extreme. Which means the driving force, the desire for mukti is much more stronger than the desire for bhakti. So therefore, he says that therefore mukti, the desire for mukti becomes the greatest obstacle for the progress of bhakti. So therefore he says the order is right. Akama is best. Sarvakama is still okay. But mokshakama is very difficult case. Therefore, throughout Bhagavatam, whenever the glory of the holy name, the glory of Krishna Katha, or the glory of the path of bhakti is given, how powerful is the process? Almost always, they say that, oh, even a muktikami gets attracted to Krishna. Even a muktikami gets attracted to the process of bhakti. You see? He says, the Shaunakadi rishis, they ask Suta Goswami, Savai nivritti nirataha sarvatra upekshako munihi kasyava brhati metam atmarama samabhyasat. They say, my dear Suta Goswami, this Shukadeva Goswami was a complete Atmarama. He was completely absorbed in his goal of mukti. How could he get attracted to Bhagavatam? So which means, it is very difficult for such people to get attracted to pure devotional service. And then, in the third canto, talking about the four kumaras, it is mentioned, Tasyaravinda Nayanasya Padaravinda Kinjalka Mishra Tulasi Makaranda Vayu Antargatasva Vivarena Chakaratesham Sankshobam Aksharajusham Api Chitta Tanvo. The word Api means, even though they were fixed in Brahman. Api indicates the even they got attracted like that. So which means, such people who are fixed in the goal of mukti, for them to get attracted to bhakti is most difficult. Therefore, again and again the word api will come. And we saw in the first canto, Atma Ramascha Munayo Nirgranta Api Urukrame Kurvanti Ahaitukim Bhaktim Ittam Bhuta Gunahari. Even the Atmaramas get attracted to the qualities of Krishna. Such are the glorious qualities of Krishna. So therefore, they are the most difficult to get attracted to Krishna. That is why Akama, Sarvakama and Mokshakama. That comes last. Another, Parinishtito Api Nairgunya Uttama Shloka Leelaya Grihita Cheta Rajarshe Akyanam Yadaditavan, second canto, first chapter. When Shukadeva Goswami is talking about himself, he says, you know what, actually even though I was a Brahmavadi, still I got attracted to this Bhagavatam. Such is the glory of Bhagavatam. So, everywhere, whenever the glory of Bhagavatam or the holy name is to be mentioned, they say that even these Muktigamis get attracted. Which means they are the most difficult to get attracted. Because Mukti Kam is a very deep-rooted, much more deep-rooted desire. And it is also a selfish desire only. It is not the desire to please Krishna. Even though the goal Mukti is transcendental, but the desire is material. The goal is transcendental, but the desire is material. And the desire is selfish. And it is much more selfish than the desire to enjoy in this material world. Because if he sees some other more enjoyable object, he will give up this object. And he will not sacrifice his sleep to attain it. Whereas a muktikami will sacrifice practically everything to attain that mukti. So therefore, he says that the order is right. Akama, Sarvakama and Mokshakama. This is not to say that the destination of Mukti is inferior to enjoyment in this material world. He is just talking about the desire. Actually, when Rupa Goswami wrote this verse, Bhukti Mukti Spruha Yavat Pishachi Hridi Vartate. Actually, after Rupa Goswami completed his compiling his Bhakti Rasamrit Sindhu, one day Vallabhacharya came. Vallabhacharya was a good friend of and a senior Vaishnava compared to Rupa Goswami. So he came to Rupa Goswami's bhajan kutir and he said, oh Rupa Goswami, what's happening nowadays? What are you working on? He said, I have completed my Bhakti Rasamrit Sindhu. Would you please like to edit this book? So Vallabhacharya said, okay, I will edit this book. So he took that book and he was going through and he saw this verse and he said, oh, what is this? You are comparing mukti to a witch. The scriptures glorify mukti. How can you call mukti as a witch? So this is the first editing that I will do. So Rupa Goswami says, okay, yes, thank you very much. And he leaves to Yamuna to take bath. In the meantime, Jiva Goswami is observing this whole thing. So after Rupa Goswami leaves, after some time, he tells Vallabhacharya, my dear Vallabhacharya, I just want to make one small comment. He says, can you please read it carefully? Rupa Goswami has not mentioned mukti to be the witch. He says, mukti spriha, the desire for mukti is the witch. And he explains how the desire for mukti makes one's mind completely preoccupied with it. Therefore, there is no space to think about favorably serving Krishna. So therefore, he is calling mukti spriha to be, he is comparing that to be a witch, but not mukti to be a witch. Then he hears, oh, this is such a exalted thought. I never thought about it. Then, while this discussion is happening, Rupa Goswami comes back from after taking bath. So Vallabhacharya takes this book and he hands it over to Rupa Goswami and he says, your disciple has opened my eyes. You know, actually this is something very exalted that you have written. Actually, I am not qualified to even edit this book. And then he hands over the book to Rupa Goswami and he goes back to his bhajan kutif. And Rupa Goswami says to Jiva Goswami, get out of Vrindavan. There is no place for a proud scholar like you in Vrindavan. So you may leave. Actually, he was just setting the right example through Jiva Goswami. So he said, how could you talk like this to a senior Vaishnava? Vallabhacharya is senior to me. This is Maryada Vyatikram. Out of your pride of scholarship, you spoke like this. You can leave Vrindavan like that. So, the point is, mukti is not demeaned here. Actually, the desire for mukti is what is indicated to be a deadly obstacle in one's practice of devotional service. That is why Prabhupada again and again, or all the acharyas, they are very much against this impersonal liberation. Because it is a purely selfish desire. Oh, one wants to merge in the, wanting to merge in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, it can act as a very severe obstacle to develop attraction for Krishna. Like that. It could be any mukti. But the desire to relieve oneself, whether it may be to go to Brahma Jyoti, or it may be Salokya, Sarshti, Samipya, Sarupya, Ekatvam Apyuta, Diyamanam Nagrinanti Vinamat Sevanam Jana. So, the desire to go to Vaikuntha also, without the only desire to please Krishna, is also considered to be an inferior desire. Like that. It could be Saguna Mukti or Nirguna Mukti. Nirguna Mukti is still bad because there is no scope for serving the Lord. But Saguna Mukti also, having a desire for that, indicates that 100% desire is not for pleasing Krishna. Because such a person who has 100% desire for pleasing Krishna, he is Swarga Apavarga Narakeshu Api Tulyartha Darshina. He sees Swarga or Apavarga or Naraka equally. He sees wherever is service, I am willing to go there. He does not see Vaikuntha as something special. He asks, oh, would you like to go to Vaikuntha? he will say, is there service for me there? He says, no, you just enjoy. He says, no. Send me to that place where there is service. That's what that's what is the devotee. So therefore, it includes Saguna Mukti also. That's why Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu talks about
Sukha Aishwarya Uttara Mukti Prema Seva Uttara Mukti. And one who desires pure devotional service only seva. Harau ekantinah.
So one may go to Vaikuntha with these three desires. Okay. Sukha Aishwaryottara Mukti means one may say that, you know what, actually I want to worship Krishna, but Krishna in Vaikuntha only. You know, ultimately I want to go to Vaikuntha. So the desire to go to Vaikuntha is predominant. But at the same time, he is willing to worship the Supreme Lord also. Okay. Such people also go to Vaikuntha. There could be other people who are predominantly interested in pleasing the Supreme Lord only, but they have a tinge of desire to go to Vaikuntha and serve. So the desire to go to Vaikuntha is secondary, but nevertheless that desire is also there. And the third category of people are Harau Ekantinah, whose only desire is to worship Krishna. It could be in Vaikuntha, it could be in Naraka, it could be in Apavarga. So wherever service opportunity is there, they want to go and serve. So such people, they may get Krishna will keep them in Naraka, even though they don't see. Krishna will take them to the spiritual world for sure, even though they do not desire it. He will take them to the spiritual world and give them service there. So these people, they achieve prema in spiritual world. These people, they may achieve up to Shantarati. Shantarati means the stage of bhava, and which is now considered to be lesser than prema. And such people, they just attain Salokya Mukti. But in Vaikuntha, they may not experience prema or Shantarati. They experience something less than that. Okay. So, even within Vaikuntha, there are like different gradations. People with different desires can go to Vaikuntha like that. This is described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So, now we will see what Prabhupada writes here in the purport. So here Srila Vishwanatha Thakura writes, a mokshakami is even more filled with desires than a sarvakami, as it is mentioned after sarvakama. So he says, kama indicates a desire to destroy suffering and attain happiness. Kama means what? Dukkha nivritti, sukha pravritti. Okay. The sarvakami, or the desire of bhukti or enjoyment, they only desire to give up temporary suffering and get some temporary happiness. But the jnanis have stronger desire to give up material suffering and experience the happiness of Brahman. So that degree of desire is very strong there. That is why they are able to perform unimaginable austerities to attain it. Whereas one with material desire will not do much, because that desire is not very strong. Therefore, only devotees are nishkama, as they only want to give happiness to the Supreme Lord. But one may say, why all three of them are called Udaradi? Very intelligent people. Huh? Like for example, Krishna says, Kamais taistair hritagyana prapadyante anya devata. Hritajnana means what? One who have lost their intelligence. Why they have lost their intelligence? Because of material desires, right? So Krishna is calling them foolish because of material desires. But here he is calling Udara Dihi. They are of magnanimous intelligence. He is calling whom? So therefore, the criticism, the calling them foolish is not because they have material desires. They are Hritajnana because Prapadyante Anya Devata, not because of Kama. That is secondary reason, but primarily because of Prapadyante Anya Devata. Because in the same series later he says, Udara Sarva Evaite. So he says that this Artho, Artharthi, Jigyasu, Jnani, these four, he says that Udara, they are of magnanimous intelligence. If having Kama is the cause of being foolish, then they should also be called as foolish only, because an Artharthi or Artha, they all have material desires only, they all have Kama. The Artharthi has desire for Sukha Pravritti, the Artha has desire for Dukkha Nivritti. Correct? Destruction of suffering and gaining happiness. But here the word Udara Dihi indicates their intelligence is glorified because they surrender to Krishna. That is the reason. They are the most difficult to change. But they can change. But it's very difficult for them to change. Because they have very deep-rooted conditionings. Even though they may be sattva-guni conditionings, but that is very deep-rooted. So it's very difficult to change. So Prabhupada says, because they make Bhagavan as the object of their worship, it is a sign of good intelligence. Like that. Okay. Any other comments before we move on to the next verse? Sukha Ishwaryottara Mukti, Prema Sevottara Mukti, and Harau Ekantinaha. Three categories. Maybe after class I can show you from Bhakti Rasamsindhu slides, I'll show you. Okay, let's move on. The next question is, he has established that Tivra Bhakti is the topmost. Okay, if one is to be intelligent. So at what stage of the demigod worship, after how long after worshipping the demigods will they become devotees? That is the next question. Because all these are demigod worshippers. So he said that the demigod worshippers, the demigods, after receiving worship from them for very long time, will they lead them to become devotees? That is the question. When will they become devotees? That's what is indicated here. Etavaneva yajatam iha nishreya sodayah Bhagavati achalo bhavo yad bhagavata sangataha. So, nishreyasa udayaha. What is nishreyasa? Means complete auspiciousness. Udayaha means it will arise. Etavan eva yajatam. Amongst all these various different demigod worshippers, when will the ultimate auspiciousness arise? Yad Bhagavata Sangataha. Only if they get association of devotees is that possible. Otherwise, it is not possible. And what is that Bhagavati Achalo Bhavo? Bhagavati Achalo Bhavo is the same as Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. So that Bhagavati Achalo Bhavo they can get. So no amount of demigod worship will make them into practitioners of devotional service. Actually, they have to come in touch with pure devotees. Only then it is possible. Otherwise, it is not possible. That is what is indicated here. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. 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 All of us were demigod worshippers, certainly. Yeah, but the point is, all of us were demigod worshippers. All of us are now worshippers of Krishna. Only because of association. Because there are millions more who are still demigod worshippers only and they have not taken up to devotional service. So our numbers are extremely less. Their numbers are very high. So that's the... So through Agyat Sukrati, they get. Srila Prabhupada writes here in the purport, neither demigod worship nor the modern plans, nothing can solve the chief problems of this world. That is, birth, death, old age and disease. Modern scientist plans nor the demigod worshippers. Both cannot solve the actual problems, birth, death, old age, disease. There are many different kings and scientists. They come with their own plan. And they leaving their plan-making story. Their plan-making story remains, but they leave. The modern scientists don't even accept God or demigods. They make their own plan to reach the planets in their own mechanical way. Chandrayaan, what is it? It has gone. Chandrayaan 2. What happened to Chandrayaan 1? It went or didn't go? Okay. By this... But this is not supported by the scriptures and also not accepted by the great acharyas. Therefore, the demigod worshippers at least get better material situation, somewhat. But these gross materialists are under complete illusion. He doesn't enjoy even that facility, though it may also be temporary. But better than both, whether material scientists or a demigod worshipper, better than both of them is the worshipper of Vishnu. But amongst these two, at least a demigod worshipper is okay, because he is accepting someone's superiority at least. Okay. So that is why gross materialist is the lowest. Higher than that is demigod worshippers. Higher than that is, you can say, Virat worshippers. Higher than that are direct worshippers of Krishna. Like that. A Paramatma worship is, after Virat worship, you can say. And finally, he says, Jnanam yada prati nivritta gunor michakram Atma prasada uta yatra guneshva sanga kaivalya sammata patastvata bhakti yoga ko nirvrato harikata suratim na kuryat. So he says, here Prabhupada and Srila Vishnu Jagadakur give different explanations of this verse. First we will take Vishnu Jagadakur's explanation. Then we will read. What is second is Vishnu Jagadakur's explanation. What is first is Prabhupada's explanation. First we will take the second explanation. So someone may say, I have worshipped the demigods throughout my life. I have been loyal to the demigods. Now, you are asking me to give up my loyalty and worship some other person? So one may say, throughout the life, I have worshipped this demigod. Now you want me to kick him off and worship someone else? How can I give up my loyalty to the demigod? Like that one may say. So, here, Shukadeva Goswami gives a very interesting argument. He says, yad jnanam. When the path of jnana, what is the nature of the path of jnana? Kaivalya sammatapata. It is an approved path for achieving the Lord. Jnana yoga. Demigod worship is not approved also. Okay. At least to attain the Brahman feature of the Lord, Jnana Yoga is approved by the scriptures. Kaivalya Sammata Pata. It is accepted path. A Pratinivritta Gunormi Chakram. And this Jnana creates indifference to this material world. Whereas demigod worship does not create any indifference to the material world. It creates more attraction only to this material world. Atma Prasada. The path of jnana at least gives some self-realization and satisfaction. Demigod worship does not give any self-realization and satisfaction. Okay. Yatra guneshu asangaha. By the path of jnana, one gets complete detachment from gunas of this world. But by practice of demigod worship, one gets complete attachment to the gunas of this world. Okay. When such a jnana yogi can give up jnana and take up to bhakti yoga, atha bhakti yoga, then what is, why should a demigod worshipper not give up his demigod worship and take up to bhakti? Compared to demigod worship, the path of jnana is so glorious. Even such jnana yogis give up that path of jnana and take up to bhakti. Why shouldn't the demigod worshippers give up their demigod worship and take up to bhakti? Ko nirvrito harikatasu ratimna kuryat. Then what intelligent person will not give up whatever practice he is practicing and take up to hari bhakti, which is characterized by shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, like that. This is Vishnu Jagadakur's explanation of this verse. This is clear. So this path of jnana is so glorious. It is an approved path. By practicing this path, one develops indifference to the three gunas. It satisfies the self. It creates complete detachment from this material world. Still a jnana yogi, when he understands the glory of bhakti yoga, he gives up that jnana yoga and takes up to bhakti yoga. But you are practicing demigod worship, which has none of these qualities. Still, why you should not give up demigod worship and take up to bhakti yoga? This is the argument. Prabhupada gives a slightly different understanding to this verse. He says, yad jnanam. Here, yad refers to Lord Hari. That knowledge in connection with Lord Hari, which means knowledge of bhakti yoga. What is the nature of that knowledge? A pratinivritta gunormi chakram. So, a pratinivritta gunormi chakram means that knowledge is knowledge resulting in the complete suspension of waves and whirlpools of material modes. So he says that it, as Bhagavatam says, Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu Shivadam Tapatraya Unmoolanam. The nature of the knowledge that is given by Bhagavatam is that it has the capacity to completely uproot the tapatraya. Tapatraya unmoolanam. That is the nature of bhakti. such knowledge is self-satisfying. Savai pumsam paro dharmo ito bhaktir adokshaje ahaituki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. It completely satisfies the self. Atma prasada uta yatra guneshu asangah, due to the process itself being free of the gunas. Only the process of pure devotional service is free from the three gunas. Okay. Actually, it is mentioned in the 11th canto. This is Uddhava Gita. Krishna is explaining to Uddhava 11.25.24 onwards. He is talking about what is knowledge in the three modes and what is transcendental knowledge. What is residence in the three modes and what is transcendental residence? What is, who is a worker within the three modes and who is a transcendental worker? What is faith within the three modes and what is transcendental faith? Like that he explains. So Abhi, we will not discuss about Rajogun Tamogun because that is very clear, we can understand. We will try to compare goodness and transcendental. Okay, only those two aspects we will compare. So he says, Kaivalyam Satvikam Jnanam Madnishtam Nirgunam Smritam. I am just taking the first and last. Okay, what is knowledge in the mode of goodness? Absolute knowledge is in the mode of goodness, which means knowledge about the, some knowledge about spirituality is in mode of goodness. Spiritual knowledge like Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, these are all, you know, spiritual, but they are in mode of goodness. Mad Nishtam Nirgunam Smritam, knowledge based upon me is considered to be transcendental. So transcendental knowledge means only knowledge related to Krishna. Only bhakti literatures are transcendental. Even Ashtanga Yoga is not transcendental, which means transcendental to the three modes. Vanam to Satviko Vaso Mad Niketam to Nirgunam. Living in a forest is in mode of goodness, but living in my temple is transcendental. Satvika Karako Asangi Nirguno Madapashraya. A worker who is completely free of any attachment is not transcendental, is in mode of goodness. But a worker who has taken shelter of Krishna and working for Krishna's pleasure, he is beyond three modes. He is Nirguna. Satviki Adhyatmiki Shraddha Matsevayam to Nirguna. Faith directed towards spiritual life is not transcendental faith. It is faith in mode of goodness. Matsevayam to Nirguna. But faith in serving Krishna is actually transcendental faith. Satvikam Sukam Atmottam Nirgunam Madapashrayam. The kind of pleasure that one experiences through realizing the self is happiness in the mode of goodness. Self, the happiness of self-realization is happiness in the mode of goodness. But happiness found in serving Krishna is actually transcendental happiness, beyond three modes. So like that, here Shukadeva Goswami is mentioning Atma Prasada Uta Yatra Guneshwa Sangaha. Such knowledge about Bhakti or Bhagavan is capable of satisfying the self because it is completely free from material attachment. It is beyond three gunas. And Kaivalya Sammatapata. This is the path which is completely approved by all the great acharyas. Param Brahma Param Dama Pavitram Paramam Bhavan Purusham Sashvatam Divyam Adidevam Ajam Vibhum Ahustvam Rishayas Sarve Devarshi Naradas Tata Asito Devalo Vyaso Swayam Cheva Bravishime. So Arjuna tells to Krishna in the 10th chapter, actually you are right, you are Param Brahma, you are Param Dama, you are Pavitram Paramam Bhavan, you have told all the great rishis like Asito, Devalo, Vyaso, everyone has told. So ultimately all the great people who understand the conclusions of scriptures, they conclude that Bhakti Yoga is only the topmost, or the knowledge of Bhakti is the topmost. Ko nirvrito harikata su ratim na kuryad. Therefore, what intelligent person will not get attracted to the path of Bhakti, which is characterized by Shravanam Kirtanam like that? This is Prabhupada's explanation of this verse. Is it clear? Vishnajagadha Kur gives one explanation, Prabhupada gives another explanation. Both are in line with the Siddhanta, Siddhantic conclusions like that. Okay. So here the bhakta experiences transcendental bliss even while he is practicing his sadhana. If properly undertaken under the guidance of a guru, if the practice is properly under the guidance of a guru, this bliss culminates in sandrananda visheshatma at the stage of prema, like that. And Prabhupada writes, why is this word kaivalya connected with bhakti? Because kaivalya is generally connected with mukti, impersonal mukti. This is because the Lord is known as kaivalya, and therefore the means to approach the Lord, that is bhakti, is called kaivalya pata. That it is the only means to attain the Supreme Personality of God. Therefore, it is called as Kaivalya. So, Srila Prabhupada writes, this process of bhakti starts with Shravanam and it leads to transcendental knowledge about the Lord. And transcendental knowledge leads to complete detachment from material body, family, etc. This he achieves by reaching a state of complete satisfaction. So only because he is completely satisfied in serving the Lord, he is able to develop detachment from this material world. Like that. Such a devotee might still, for the pleasure of Supreme Lord, engage in preaching activities. But such an activity is spiritual activity. That is still anyabhilashita shunyam only. So now, with this explanation, Sukadeva Goswami has practically discussed all the paths. He has explored the path of mukti, he has explored the path of bhukti, he has explored the path of demigod worship, and eventually established bhakti to be the topmost. Okay? In one sense, at least now, Sukadeva Goswami has answered all the questions asked by Parikshit Maharaj. Ideally, Bhagavatam should end here. Okay? Because the question has been answered. But we know that it continues further. Okay? So, actually Suta Goswami is narrating this to Sukadeva Goswami, to the Shaunakadi Rishis. And when they heard that Sukadeva Goswami has actually answered the question asked by Parikshit Maharaj, they fear that the Suta Goswami is not completely narrating the whole experience. He is just giving only the conclusions of the discussion. So they become very fearful. They want to know more. They are not satisfied just hearing so much Krishna Katha. So, Shaunaka the Rishis, now they start asking Suta Goswami. Shaunaka uvacha iti abhivyahritam raja nishamya bharta rishabha kimanyat prishtavan boyo vaya sakim rishim kavim. So they are telling iti abhivyahritam nishamya. After hearing this explanation, Kimanyat Raja? Bhuyo Prishtavan. What else did the what else did Parikshit Maharaj ask? So they are not even giving a benefit of doubt to Suta Goswami. They are not asking Suta Goswami, did Parikshit Maharaj ask some more questions? They didn't ask. They are asking, what else did Parikshit Maharaj ask? Because we know that this conversation went on for 7 days. And it has been just about 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And it already it seems like you have concluded. They say, we know Parikshit Maharaj would have asked more questions. So you please tell me what other questions did Parikshit Maharaj ask? Vaya sakim rishim kamim to Shukadev Goswami. So already they had mentioned, karmanyasmin anashwasi dumra dumratmanan bhavan apayayati govinda pada padmasavam madhu. Of course this chapter is not over for you. He says that my dear Suta Goswami, we came here to perform a 1,000-year sacrifice, but after a few years, all that we have received is that our faces have become black because of the soot that is coming out of the sacrificial fire. So therefore, we are here to drink the nectarian beverage of Krishna Katha. Govinda Pada Padmasavam Madhu. Please make us drink the nectarian beverage of Krishna's lotus feet in the form of Krishna Katha. And then they say, Kalim Agatam Agnyaya Kshetresmin Vaishnavayam Asina Dirga Satrena Katayam Sakshana Harehe. He says, you know what? We came here to this place to perform a 1,000-year sacrifice, which means we were ready to spend 1,000 years for the benefit of this world. So, you don't cut short the katha. We have 1,000 years. We are ready to hear for 1,000 years. So, you don't cut short the katha. Speak it very elaborately. Vayam tuna vitrupyama uttama shloka vikrame yachrinvatam rasagyanam swadu swadu pade pade. They say that actually we are never tired of hearing the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Because at every step there is so much nectar in Krishna Katha. So therefore, please don't cut short the Krishna Katha. Speak in detail. Like that they had already mentioned. But now it seemed like Suta Goswami actually spoke some sutras only. The whole narration ended in 15-20 minutes. So they say, no. Parikshit Maharaj would have asked more questions. So please speak in detail. Like that they are expressing their eagerness to hear more. Okay. Etat shushrushatam vidvan sotanor hasibashitum katahariko darka satam syusadasidruvam. So he says, O Suta, naha bashitum arhasi, you should tell to us, Shushrushatam, who have a great desire to hear. So what do you desire to hear? Kata harikata udarka. He says, speak about any topic, but it should conclude in harikata. It must have some connection with harikata. Anything you speak, no problem. So kata harikata udarka dhruvam siu satam sadasi. He says that definitely in an assembly of Shukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, definitely discussion must have happened about topics which concluded in Harikatha. It may not be direct Harikatha, but that it may indirectly conclude in Harikatha. So therefore, like we discussed on the second day, that Bhagavatam also talks about these 10 topics. Atrasargo, Visargascha, Sthanam, Poshanam, Mutaya. But the speciality of Bhagavatam is Dashamasya Vishuddhyartam Nahanam Navanam Ihalakshanam Varnayante Mahatmana Shrutena Artena Cha Anjasa. So all the other 9 topics, their description is only for the sole purpose of glorifying the 10th topic of Ashraya. Actually, no other scripture is so consistent in describing all the other topics purely in relationship with Krishna. Okay? So, as we saw in the, I quoted from 12th canto, Harir itaratra na giyate hi abhikshnam. In the other literatures, there is no constant glorification of Lord Hari. Iha tu punar Bhagavan ashesha murti paripatito anupadam kata prasangaihi. But in Bhagavatam, every description of sarga or visarga or sthana, poshana, muti, everything is described in such a way that it ends in glorification of Bhagavan, Bhakti and Bhakta. But other scriptures, they are not so consistent in this purpose of glorifying Bhagavan when it describes the other topics. So therefore here, Shaunakadi Rishis say that definitely in that association of devotees, exalted devotees like Suta Goswami, Shukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, topics connected to Krishna would have definitely been discussed. So you please don't cut short, speak in detail. So then he says, Savai Bhagavato Raja Pandaveyo Maharatah Bala Kredana Kai Kredan Krishna Kredamya Adade. And how glorious was this Parikshit Maharaj? Maharata, he was a Maharati. What is so glorious about Parikshit Maharaj? They say, Bala Kredana Kai Hi Kredam Krishna Kredamya Adade. When he used to play as a child, he used to play enact Krishna's pastimes when he was as a child. He used to use Krishna's toys or Krishna toys like that. So one may say, of all the great things that Parikshit Maharaj has done, is this the greatest thing? He had stopped Kali from entering. Such a great thing. All the kings used to automatically come and pay their taxes to Parikshit Maharaj without his having even going to that particular kingdom. Isn't that great? He says, of all the greatest things, what Parikshit Maharaj did as a child, he would enact Krishna's drama. That is what he is telling is the greatest thing. And why? Prabhupada writes here in the purport that if a yoga brashta, 6th chapter, Suchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brashto Bijayate. So if a yoga brashta can be born in a very glorious family, what to speak of a great devotee like Parikshit Maharaj? He was born in the great family of the Pandavas and hence he got to see their deity worship and hear Krishna Katha. Therefore, even while playing with dolls, he used to imitate those pastimes of Krishna which he had heard. Then Prabhupada gives his own example. So Prabhupada says that by the grace of Lord Shri Krishna, we had a chance. Prabhupada is talking about himself. We had a chance of being born in a Vaishnava family, and in our childhood we imitated the worship of Lord Krishna by imitating our father. Our father encouraged us in all respects to observe all functions such as the Ratha Yatra and the Dola Yatra ceremonies. And he used to spend money liberally for distributing prasad to us children and our friends. Our spiritual master, who also took his birth in a Vaishnava family, got all the inspirations from his great Vaishnava father, Thakur Bhakti Vinod. That is the way of all lucky Vaishnava families. The celebrated Mirabai was a staunch devotee of Lord Krishna as the great lifter of Govardhan Hill. So further Prabhupada writes, the life history of many such devotees is almost the same because there is always symmetry between the early lives of all great devotees of the Lord. So he says that don't neglect such inclinations. So such inclinations indicate that they are very great devotees. According to Jiva Goswami, Maharaj Parikshit must have heard about childhood pastimes of Lord Krishna at Vrindavan for he used to imitate the pastimes with his young playmates. According to Sridhar Swami, Maharaj Parikshit used to imitate the worship of the family deity by elderly members. According to Srila Vishnachakradakur also confirms the viewpoint of Jiva Goswami. So accepting either of them, Maharaj Parikshit was naturally inclined to Lord Krishna from his very childhood. So Prabhupada says that actually such symptoms are indications of a Nitya Siddha. But one may say, but not everyone might be a Nitya Siddha. So how many of you had were only performing Krishna related pastimes when you grew up as a child? You had no inclination to any other sports like that. Anyone here? So, what's his name? Jitendra Prabhu, you are like that? So, but he says that no need to worry. If one has not shown such symptoms from an early age, one can at any age take up to Krishna consciousness and perfect his life. One may not be a Nitya Siddha, but one can always become a Sadhana Siddha. One can practice bhakti and perfect it. And Prabhupada says, the life of Narada Muni is the example of that. He was not a Nitya Siddha, but by performing sadhana, he became a Sadhana Siddha. Like that. And in fact, if you see in the third canto, when Vidura is glorifying Uddhava. Here, this is Shukadev Goswami is glorifying Uddhava. He says, of all the great things that Uddhava has done, he chose one verse to glorify Uddhava, one activity. Ya panchahayano matra pratar ashaya yachita tan naichad rachayan yasya sapariyam balalilaya. When Uddhava used to be about 5 years old, he was so absorbed in the service of Lord Krishna. He would be, you know, playing like Krishna sports. Okay? Pratar ashaya yachita. When his mother used to call him to take breakfast, tad na ichchat, he had no desire to go and eat because he was so absorbed in, performing. Playing with Krishna dolls or, you know, enacting Krishna's dramas like that. So Prabhupada says, so this is the second instance in Bhagavatam when it is mentioned that how great was he? Oh, when he was a child, he used to enact Krishna's pastimes. So he says that, you know, these are not ordinary things. If one naturally gets attracted to these things at a very early age, this is an indication that he must have been a very exalted devotee. That is okay, at least. Yeah. Like that. And then he glorifies Shukadev Goswami. Vayasakischa Bhagavan Vasudeva Parayanah Urugaya Gunodara Satam Syurhi Samagame. He says, and even Shukadev Goswami was not an ordinary person. He was also a Vasudeva Parayana. He was completely, he had taken full shelter of Vasudev. So therefore, during the meeting of such exalted personalities like Parikshit Maharaj and Shukadev Goswami, definitely topic Krishna Katha must have been discussed. So therefore, can you please speak about what happened in that association of Shukadev Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, like that he's asking. Okay. So Srila Prabhupada writes here in the purport, only in the association of devotees can Krishna Katha be properly discussed. So one has to be a practitioner of pure pure devotional service. It is better to discuss Krishna Katha with sadhakas who may not be very exalted, rather than going and hearing from someone who may be an expert Bhagavad Katha speaker but may not necessarily be a pure devotee, whose practice may have tinges of, you know, karma, jnana, yoga, etc. This is important because, especially being in a place like Vrindavan where constantly Bhagavad Katha is happening everywhere, we can't just be indiscriminate and go and sit there. They may be explaining some pastimes with very deep explanations and all that, but if their heart has tinges of, if they are not in parampara, it is always very risky. However wonderfully they may be explaining it, if you don't know their source, parampara, very risky. Especially in a place like Bhagavatam, those of you who know Hindi, you may get attracted to hear, but be very careful. When what Apasiddhanta will come, we are not very shrewd enough to understand. We are not so firmly rooted in our own books. So it is always very risky. So therefore, Prabhupada says that only in the association of devotees can Krishna Katha be properly discussed. Only superficially did Sukadeva Goswami seem like a much more advanced devotee compared to Parikshit Maharaj. But in actuality, both were ananya bhaktas. Therefore, when such devotees are assembled, there can be no other topics other than topics of bhakti yoga. Therefore, Prabhupada writes, the word Vasudeva Parayana refers to both Parikshit Maharaj and Sukadeva Goswami, not just Sukadeva Goswami. Indicating that Krishna was the common aim of discussion for both of them. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is only for glorification of Krishna and nothing else. Okay. He says, Sajatiya Ashes Nigde Sadhu Sangha Swatovare. The kind of association that one should seek. Sajatiya Ashe means like-minded. Snigde means affectionate. But one may be like-minded and affectionate, but may not be devotees. Like for example, I like to watch cricket, he likes to watch cricket. Huh? Okay, we are Sajatiya Ashe, we have like-mindedness. Snigde, we both have very affectionate relationship. So both of us sit together and watch cricket. Okay, no. That is Sadhu Sangha, it has to be Sadhu Sangha also. And Swatovare. Swatovare means two meanings. One is more elevated than oneself. The association must be more elevated than oneself. Our second meaning is, when the two devotees come together, after that association, both should feel that their Krishna consciousness has become elevated. Like that. So that is Sadhu Sangha. That is the kind of association that can elevate one. Like that. Then he says, Ayurharati vaipum sam udyan astam chayan asau tasyariteya chanonita uttama shloka vartaya. He says, by the rising and setting of the sun, ayur harati, it steals away the duration of life of everyone. With the setting of the sun, one day is gone. Tasya riteya chanonita uttama shloka vartaya. Except for those people who have spent their time discussing Krishna Katha. Why? Because it is an eternal investment. One may say, do you mean to say that devotees are not going to die? They may discuss Krishna Katha, but devotees also die. Non-devotees also die. Then why then does the rising and setting of sun not take away the life of, not take away the time of devotees? Why only non-devotees? So here, both Srila Prabhupada and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explain. If life is not taken away by hearing about Krishna, then a devotee should not die. That is true. How? Just like we say that the wealth of those with good character is imperishable wealth, since others spend their wealth in unlimited pleasures. For such a person, birth, death, old age and disease appear by the will of the Lord. So, time is the carrier of karma. For those who are not surrendered to Krishna. So, in the first canto of Bhagavatam, you all must have read, when Yudhishthir Maharaj is coming to meet Bhishma Dev, first canto, 9th chapter, so he is lamenting. Anyway, we will come to that. Time has two portfolios. One is the assistant of karma or the assistant of the Supreme Lord. Time is just like a conveyor belt. You know what is a conveyor belt. So if you put a soap on the conveyor belt, the other person will receive a soap. If you put a golden ring on the conveyor belt, the other person will receive a golden ring. So, time is just like the conveyor belt. It just conveys whatever is there. For a person who is not a devotee, it carries his karma. Oh, now it's time for you to get diseased. Now it's time for you to die. Now it's time for you to get some wealth. So time carries one's karma. Karma sachiva. But when one takes up to the practice of pure devotional service, it takes on a different portfolio. Daiva sachiva. It carries the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rupa bedaspadam divyam kalayityabhidiyate bhutana mahadadinam yato bhinna drisham bayam. This is Kapiladev's teachings to Devahuti in the third canto. He says, my dear mother, I am astonishing time, the cause of transformation of material objects, from which fear arises for living beings with material bodies in ignorance. For those people who have material bodies and who are identifying with those material bodies, for them time causes fear. Why it causes fear? Because it acts as the carrier of their karma. And you do not know whether it is carrying good karma or bad karma. So therefore time causes fear. Yato bhinna drisham bhayam. It instills fear in those people who are material, who are with material consciousness. Prabhavam paurusham prahuk kalam eke yato bayam ahankara vimudasya kartuhu prakritim iyusha. Again, Kapiladev to Devahuti, he says that time is that Lord's power by which fear arises in the jiva, who having contacted prakriti is bewildered by false ego. If someone is bewildered by false ego and not surrendering to Krishna, for him, because time carries his own karma, it instills fear. But that is just one aspect of time. For devotees, time acts as Daiva Sachiva, the carrier of Lord's will. When Yudhishthira Maharaj came in front of Bhishma Dev, he was telling, why are you... He was really lamenting that I am the cause of killing so many people. My selfishness is the cause of so many Akshavani Sena getting killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Like that he was lamenting. So Bhishma Dev exactly knew why Krishna had brought Yudhishthir Maharaj there. So he told, Sarvam kalakritam manye bhavatam cha yada priyam. Sapalo yadvasho loke vayoriva ganavali. He says that, my dear Parikshit Maharaj, my dear Yudhishthir Maharaj, understand that everything, you are not the cause, time is the cause of your suffering. So, Yudhishthir Maharaj may say, why are you sugar coating? Time is just the conveyor belt. Time just gives me whatever I deserve because of my karma. Why you are telling sarvam kalakritam manye? Why don't you just tell sarvam tava karma kritam manye? Your suffering is due to your own karma. Why don't you say that? Why you are just, is time the cause? Time just gives you what you deserve according to your karma. So he says, I am suffering because of my bad karma. Why don't you say that? Before that actually he says, aho kashtam aho anyayam yadyuyam kurunandana jivitam narhatum klishtam vipra dharma achyutashraya. My dear Yudhishthir, you must have died long back actually. What kind of suffering you had to go through? What kind of injustice? The Kauravas were so bad to you. You survived to fight this battle only because you took shelter of Brahmanas, Dharma and Krishna. Only because of that you are surviving. Therefore, so he says, but your suffering is due to time, not due to your karma. He says, why due to time? It must be due to my karma only. Time carries my karma only. He says, no. Yatra dharma suto raja gadapanir vrikodara krishna astri gandivam chapam surat krishna stato vipat. When Krishna is personally guiding you, when you have the skillful Arjuna and the powerful Bhima, and you yourself, you are the son of Dharmaraj, how can you perform some adharma or impious karma? So therefore, your suffering is not due to your karma. Then what is the cause? He says, tasmad idam daivatantram vyavasya bharatarshaba. My dear Yudhishthir, understand that time is not carrying your karma. Time is carrying the will of the Lord. The suffering of a devotee is not due to his prarabdha karma. The suffering of the devotee is personally given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Prabhupada writes here in this purport that or Srila Vishnu Jagat Thakur mentions, for such a person who is engaged in hearing and chanting, birth, death, old age and disease appear by the will of the Lord for three reasons. The first reason is that for increasing his longing for the Lord. When he undergoes material suffering, it will increase his longing for the Lord. That's why Kunti Maharani is asking for Vipadas Santuta Sashvat Tatra Tatra Jagat Guru. When she got suffering, she understood that I am having more intensity of eagerness to associate with Krishna. So let Krishna give me more and more suffering. So Krishna gives sometimes suffering for increasing the longing for the Lord. Second, for letting the opinion of others who say that karmas of this life can only be destroyed by experiencing them. Some people say that, oh, prarabdha karma can be destroyed only at the time of death. You have to experience it. Vaishnavas don't accept that. But just so that you say that, oh, Vaishnavas are also suffering, so that a common man does not get confused for that. Because he should take up to bhakti out of love for Krishna. He should not take up to bhakti because only by bhakti you overcome all material miseries. Krishna does not promise that. Third reason, he says, for protecting the confidential nature of his devotees. He does not want to expose the glories of his devotees to everyone. For these three purposes, he says that he lets devotees also undergo material suffering. But their suffering is not due to their prarabdha karma. In the book Madhurya Kadambini, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he discusses this point. I will just quickly read it for you. Okay, so this is from the third chapter of Madhurya Kadambini. The third chapter is Anartha Nivritti. So he is talking about a devotee who is at the level of Anartha Nivritti only. Okay, so he says that Yudhishthir Maharaj had achieved the association of the Supreme Lord himself and was thus certainly freed from all past karmic reactions. Still he had to suffer many apparently ordinary material miseries. So Yudhishthir Maharaj had no bad karma. Still suffering was there. As a tree bears fruit only in the proper season, the holy name, even though pleased with an offenseless person, will reveal its mercy to him only in due course of time. For the devotee, hear carefully, for the devotee, accumulated sins committed due to previous bad habits have no effect like the bite of a serpent without his poisoned fangs. So which means, when he is due to past vasanas, if he sometimes stumbles and falls trapped to sense gratification, such a person will not leave devotional service. As long as he is a sincere practitioner of devotional service. The sickness, lamentation and other sufferings undergone by devotees are not the reactions to sins in previous lives. It's not due to their prarabdha karma. The Lord himself has said, Yasyaham anugrinami harishyetat dhanam shanaihi tato adhanam tyajantyasya swajana dukkha dukkitam. If I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth, then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. In this way he suffers one distress after another. Like that he suffers. Another place Krishna says, Nirdhanatva maharogo mad anugraha lakshanam. The awesome affliction known as poverty is in fact a sign of mercy. So, the truth is that the Supreme Lord, the greatest benefactor of his devotees, purposely inflicts suffering on his devotees just to increase their humility and yearning for him. Thus the devotees' woes means suffering, are not because of fruitive reactions, nor are they reactions of prarabdha karma. So this we have to understand. So when a devotee is suffering, Krishna has personally taken over the life of the devotee. When one has, not at the stage of bhava or prema, even at the stage of anartha nivritti stage, when one has surrendered to the Guru and Krishna, then his suffering is not due to one's prarabdha karma. It is personally given by Krishna. Not that a devotee will not suffer. Not that a devotee will not get material enjoyment. But the suffering or material enjoyment is not due to his prarabdha karma, but it is personally given by Krishna with a desire to pull that devotee closer to his lotus feet. We will pause here. It's already 5 minutes past 3:30. But you can ruminate on this subject matter. And if there are any further discussions, questions, we will take this discussion tomorrow morning when we meet at 10:30. Okay. Yeah, this needs to be discussed because this opens the Pandora's box, because you know this goes into the topic of devotees going to astrology and all these things, because they, whether they can go or not, it all depends on our understanding of this particular topic. We will touch this topic tomorrow morning also. We'll sometime, at least as long as time permits, we will spend little time on this subject matter. So we'll pause here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki.